You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, you're listening to the Wig Hackers Podcast, where you get the real feeling of what goes on working on the hair side of the entertainment industry. You never know where my rants will go, so stay tuned. Hey guys, welcome back to the Wig Hackers Podcast, and it's your host, Daniel Coy. Just to let you know, I have a uber special guest on today. I got to cut some locks off, which I'm sure we're going to get into. But ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ramses JT. Woo, woo, woo. Oh, wow. Look at that. Woo, woo. That's the best round. Yeah. What's up, mister? It's been a minute.
Oh my goodness, it has been a minute, but it feels like I just saw you yesterday, honestly. As soon as I see you, it's kind of like all these things just flood back.
Was a time, right? It was definitely a time.
It was a time. I learned a lot. It was a period of a lot of growth, and I'm just extremely thankful for everything that happened. I've been able to step out of it, obviously, and see it from the outside, and the time has passed, and it's with nothing but a blessing, and everybody that we worked with, I think, was an incredible blessing.
So for those of you who don't know, who are just tuning in, Ramses was on Lincoln Rhyme's Hunt for the Bone Collector. He was Costello, one of my favorite peeps. Well, I got to do his hair. Hello. But we had a little issue during the pilot. I don't want to say issue, but he had hair literally, like, it was definitely past your shoulder. Right?
Yes.
It was definitely
to the middle, to like the bottom of my chest.
And so at 6 o'clock in the morning, so little story, I don't know if I told you, but in the first meeting we had with the director, I thought you were playing Felix. Like, first, I know. So I was like, okay, he's going to have a top knot. I like this a lot. All right, cool. Well, little to my surprise, he did not. No. So he plays a cop. So as I hope some of you know, it's about period and hair and like statue and all. So we had to cut it all off. So my first question is, how did you prepare? How did they give you that information, first and foremost?
Well, I knew when I auditioned that I was auditioning for a character that they were looking for, a very Boy Scout style detective. And I didn't originally want to go to the audition because of that, because I just didn't want to go into the whole situation of, oh, well, you know, you're looking for a detective, but I look like everything but a detective that's cleaned up. And they were like, we'll just go in. And after the audition, they were like, oh, we love it. And we're willing to rewrite the character for him, but is he okay with cutting his hair? And truth be told, the only way I was going to cut my hair was for a series regular. So I was already prepared for it. You know, I went into it with a plan to try to convince them to not cut my hair. And actually, now that I think about it, it was a good plan. And I probably could have pushed a little bit harder and kept that hair. But it happened. And, you know, it was good because I think as soon as you cut it, I went into a character.
I mean, it was, guys, we're talking like inches. There was a video he posted of it. And just that early in the morning for me, I'm like, oh, we couldn't do this another day. But it was good though. It was really good. I like you with short hair, to be honest. I like you with long. I liked when you came in with long hair. I know you're transitioning right now from short to long hair. So, look at that back. That would never fly. Well, the show didn't get picked up. Ho hum.
Well, I thought it was only, I think they were originally, they only wanted to do one season. So I think that the second season was always kind of far-fetched in general. So I think they accomplished their goal and made their money and they got out of Dodge.
I was only thinking since COVID happened, we had a chance because the set was still up.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think COVID actually dated the idea. You know, it made the idea feel old all of a sudden.
True.
Like, it made it feel like it was like the past, like a long time ago. Like, those things, those type of shows are not coming back anytime soon, type of thing.
No.
And I think also the environment changed a lot with George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, where, you know, we had a show that was very diverse in the beginning and was really pale at the end. And, you know, hey, but that was a business decision, which was very smart on part of the network, because the audience was very white and older male. So you're not going to force feed those people something that they don't want.
True.
So I understood that. But at the same time, kind of, I think it put the show in a difficult position where it was like, they were going to be looked at, NBC was going to be looked at a certain way for picking up that type of show and the type of climate that we were in. True. They made the right decision.
Yeah, no, once again, who knows? It could have been something else where they're like, no, we just don't want it. You know, like in my world, in my head, I go there.
No, but you know, I must say that the actors that we had, like Russell and Ariel, did an incredible job as leads. And when you watch the show, you can see that it had all the potential to go as far as they wanted. It could have went 11 seasons if they felt like doing all the books. They definitely could have carried the show by far.
Yeah, I know. I'm in a couple of the chat groups that are still following it. So people are still coming in because it's airing all over the world. So like, they're getting like that that second round. Legit
it's
for you.
It's an incredible situation to be on a show where on the first season it gets syndicated worldwide.
Like, I mean, I'm happy for you. My stuff's still same old. I got paid and done, basically. You get to see residuals, not here.
Well, I hope so. We got a brand new SAG agreement. They look like they're trying to chop it up. So,
well, no one's.
See, I hope I'm grandfathered in from the old agreement by far, because it ain't gonna be the same business coming up.
No,
not even close.
No, the whole thing. I mean, I'm just union talk. I mean, it's just such a different world, like what we're living in. Like, even from haircuts to how we're doing things and prepping things. Like, we already had a small crew technically, like in the hair and makeup department, but like any period piece or stuff like that, I'm worried about. But that's not this conversation though.
Sorry.
we went way, anyway. No, this is our hair talk. This was what we would talk about in the chair. Literally, I would do his hair, he'd not get his food, and he'd be in the chair, and I'd have to keep him busy, and I would have to keep his mind really occupied so he wouldn't flip out. So I would just talk to him about random things to get him to go in a tailspin of talking, just so he had, like, oh, give them X some time, you know, let the PA have a little
By the way, the food was, the hanger was also because I would come from the gym right to set.
Well, so that is true.
I would, you know, I would be starving when I would get to the set, and they'd be like, nope, your food's not ready and you can't eat. Sorry. Like, wait, what? Am I a guest star here? Where's my food? Start flipping tables. Then Daniel has to get me under control, bear hug me, sit me back down, do my hair by force. There's a reason why they killed me in season 7.
It was a good one, though, I have to say. You died very well on camera. okay, so what was the audition like for Lincoln Rhymes? Like, because you, I mean, to be honest, I'm, producers are not, and casting directors are not as creative as they used to be. Like, so I'm like example, like when they go in for auditions for like Broadway shows and like a guy has to play a girl, they want them to come fully dressed. So I'm just wanted to know how that process went, because you looked nothing like what we created for the camera. Do you know what I mean? So like, what was there, like, did you have to slick back your hair in the audition? Did you wear hats? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, I went into the audition feeling like there was no way I was going to get this in general. So I went in there very, very, very fearless. I was actually looking for some pictures to see if I had them, but I just downloaded them and deleted them from my old phone. But I went in there extremely fearless. I went there with a beard. I went with my long hair and in a bun. And I was just a very aggressive version of Eric towards Russell, and then also a very chill version towards Amelia. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't think I was going to get it, I just kind of did what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And they really liked that. They really, that's what they liked. And then when they called me back in, they were like, before he gets here, he needs to shave. He needs to tie his hair back. Mm. He needs to look like he's network ready. So, like, my agent and my manager literally picked out my wardrobe. They picked out my look. They did everything. And that was actually the first time that I had done something like that, because one of the worst experiences I had early on in getting to LA was showing up at an audition and you dress for the audition, and then you get into the audition and every single person is dressed just like you. Mm-hmm. They're like, this is not unique. This isn't the way that you're going to get a job here.
Right.
So I have the, you know, and people, casting directors know that I'll show up in pajamas. Mm, mm, mm. You know, I'm there to act. I'm not there to do costume, and I'm not there to do hair or makeup.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. That does make sense. All right. I'm going to switch gears. What is the hardest part of writing, directing, producing? Because you did it all on one project, right?
The hardest part, I think I learned to respect each position very different. You need to have these positions be a specific person in all different people. It's very rare that you get very, very good writer directors. Mm-hmm. But for first-time directors, they tell you that you're never going to direct something unless you write it, because nobody's going to give you a movie to direct if they've never seen your work. So you kind of put in that pressure position. When it comes to producing as well, you know, once you start directing and you get into that gear, you're not producing anymore. I mean, you're trying to save the production team money, but your head is so in the creative space that you're just trying to make the picture work as much as humanly possible. So I think what I really learned is just the difficulty of you can't do everything, you know, and you have to learn to trust other people. And it really is a team. Like, you have to work as a team in order to accomplish things. And, you know, egomaniacs, I'm sure, do really well in their own way. But, you know, like, those are guys that I think have already amassed. Like, if I had directed 30 films already, then writing might not be so difficult for them. Mm. You know, but your first project, you can't be a first-time writer and a first-time director and a first-time producer on a feature film. I think that's a big, big, big mistake. So even in finishing the movie right now that we're speaking about, you know, like, I say that the writer...
Oh, this is the same one.
Yeah, this is the same one.
Okay.
So I usually say that the writer didn't do a very good job. The director was mediocre. And the people that are going to finish this movie, the editors and the sound people, they have to be top-notch in order to finish right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What was it like on your first TV set you were ever on? Like, walking onto the first one?
The first TV set I was on, I have to say that I was, first of all, I have to point out that my whole career would not be possible unless amazing women did not propel me to believe in myself. And this doesn't just come from like my grandparents or like my grandmother and my mother. This is also from like the first director I ever worked with is Marisol Torres. And she's the one that convinced me when I went to ask for an application to be a grip on the film to audition. And she's actually the first director I had in a feature film. And then she also offered me the very first TV guest star appearance that I had in Law and Order. Mm. And the amount of pressure that I had on that set because it had been offered to me was unbelievable. And I don't think I've ever been so prepared. And it's actually, I feel like I climaxed in that very first guest star. Mm. My career hasn't been the same since. You know, like I did, the scenes and that I did there made me feel like, oh my God, I can do this. Like, there's something that happens when I really dig in here and working with the right director that really cares about how they're shooting you and how they're filming you. You know, I had a really, really privileged and blessed experience on my first guest star, on my first TV set. Like, I was very blessed.
How long did it take you from deciding to become an actor till you actually, like, in your brain was like, you know, no, I made it? Like, how long was that process? What was that process like? Do you know what I mean? Like, there had to have been like
I mean, the first time I wanted to do film in a acting capacity, I think. It was around the time that I was 16 years old. The first film I did was when I was 19, which is the one I just spoke about called Chicago Boricua. And then I don't think I felt like I did any, I mean, I felt like I just got to the starting line in reality. I don't know if I've done anything, but I was obviously Lincoln is the biggest, it's like that, you know, you get a series regular, it's like you've accomplished something, like you've plateaued into a different level. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's the first time I felt like, oh, I'm a professional at this.
Really? So well, Lincoln, that be, really?
Yeah. I would say that was from 19, it was about 17 years.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
17 years, so, like, I felt like I was my whole, you know, like I was getting hired because I was the diversity person and I wasn't safe or I was cute in whatever way they were looking for. Like, I never really felt like I was being hired because of talent at all. And, you know, I felt like the audition process of getting Lincoln had a lot to do with all of the things that I had learned and absorbed from all the other people. And I was able to really put it together and that I was able to get the job because of that. So that's, I think, the very first time when I felt very relieved. Well, I don't have to get in my life. I'm fine with it.
Well, I mean, it's going to be going on forever and ever and ever. I mean, how many more countries does that have to go? okay, so I did a little stalking, obviously, because that's what I do. What was the big break from 2012 to 2017 from filming? What happened? Or what were you doing?
I went to Dominican Republic with a script, and it took me a year to get the movie funded. So I was knocking on doors, trying to get investors, and then I got the movie funded late 2013. I had moved there late 2012, late 2013. I get the money. They asked, I have to shoot super quick by the end of the year. I think I got the money in November, and I had to be done shooting by December 23rd. And first project, feature, right? And then we shoot that. I do some reshoots in 2014 during the summer. Run out of money for post-production. I go into what I call editing hell. And I realized, again, I'm like, well, I wrote and directed. I might as well edit it. And it was the worst decision. And I did that after I had hired the wrong editor for the film. And I believe that there was another film in there. And then I edited into circles. And then thankfully, I met the right editor for the film. And so, like, but time just keeps passing and passing and passing throughout this time. And so, like, all of that time was because of the film. I was making a movie. So it was the best thing that ever happened to me because it forced me to live in a very creative space of a lot of sacrifice, of a lot of wins and losses and highs and lows. So by the time I showed up on camera again, you could see that my eyes had a lot more depth. There was a lot more experience in my life than there was before.
Okay. I was just wondering, because I just saw this huge break in your, like, where did he go?
Yeah.
Where did his mind go?
Yeah. I mean, I felt like I was doing well in the guest star game, and I was kind of moving along, and you know, I think maybe it was a little interest, but I hated the roles that I was doing as an actor. I felt like I wanted to shoot a short film where I could kill all of them together. I could play, like, all these characters I had played in all these shows and just, like, put them in a room and light it on fire. I just hated those roles, and I felt really passionate about a situation that was happening on the island where I was born, where children are being kidnapped and they're being, you know, mistreated and trafficked. And when I read about that, I just felt like I had to do this project. And it didn't really matter what I wanted to do personally. Like, that just had to get put to the side, and I had to make this project happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost done with it, thank God.
That's great, though. Yeah. So I know you did a little bit on The Walking Dead.
Fear of the Walking Dead.
Fear of the Walking Dead.
Yeah.
What did you learn from it, from actually, like, being on it so much?
Well, that was my first job after being absent all that time. And I definitely went into it very raw. I definitely learned that when you're on set, there is a different behavior on set, and there's things you don't say and do. Yeah, it was an experience. Fear the Walking Dead was an experience and a half. I mean, it was also one of the. I remember the audition because it was an audition that, for the very first minute of the audition, I didn't speak. Like, they said action, and it took me like a minute to sit in the chair because I was acting as the character. but I was also fearless. I had just come back from an island. I was so in debt that it was just kind of like, whatever. If I get this, I get this. If I don't, I don't. It was like the sixth audition that I had done. So, and I knew the fear of the Walking Dead. And here's what's crazy. When I was in Dominican Republic, I remember thinking to myself, when Fear the Walking Dead came out, I was like, man, see, if I was in L.A., I could have been on that show.
And it happened.
Yeah, and it happened. It was great to work on Fear the Walking Dead because I got to know some of my, you know, greatest friends that are in the business. Raul Caso was one of them. Karen Besares, another one. Andres Londono. Like, there was a big shift of, like, Latin characters that hit the show all of a sudden. Mm. And, you know, it was nice. It was nice to experience that. And, you know, working with, I think, Coleman Domingo and Alicia Carey, like, you know, it was dope. It was awesome. It was cool, man. And it was, and then it was like, you're on another syndicated worldwide show. Like, I just felt so looked out for and blessed. And it was, that's how it's been since I came back from the Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm. What is a hard no for you now? When you look at a job, like, what is going to be like throughout everything? Cause I know Lincoln as well taught you things. Like, what are those like contract no's that are in the contract?
Nudity is for sure a contract no. I don't believe in people being sexualized, hetero, homo, anything. Mm. Like, I think some things are better left to be private. And, you know, I will, you know, that's going to be the personal thing that I hold on to. Mm. I think that there's also a space where if you're in a great creative space, you know, and you feel a character a certain way, you should stick to that idea. You should not let them come in and form you and reshape you into what they may think. Because there was a lot of moments, and you know this from Lincoln, where when they cut my hair, they were still unsure. Mm. They were unsure about the look, they weren't sure what direction they're gonna go, and that created a whole bunch of insecurity in me, which really worked for the character because he was a rookie detective in a big situation.
Right.
He felt very rookie in general, and it was right. But they didn't do that on purpose. No. They weren't trying to mess with me to create that character, like, right? They created a lot of, like, do they really like me? Do they not like me anymore? It's almost like you feel like you're in this relationship, and the girl, you're like, does she like me the same now? Like, yeah, am I still as wanted here, you know? And you lose your moxie, you know? You lose your, like, your confidence in that way, and all of a sudden, you're thinking to yourself, like, dang, like, if I lose here, like, I'm losing under their terms, not even under mine.
Yeah.
So I think as artists, we want to lose under our terms. We don't want to lose under other people's terms.
Hmm.
So that, cutting that's my hair is a hard no.
And I mean, you...
hard no. You want somebody that doesn't have hair? Hire somebody who doesn't have hair. I'm fine. There's going to be another job for him. It's okay.
I'm just laughing because your hair was such a thing. Oh, it was a thing. It was.
It would have been different. Think about it. Nobody in NBC had that look. It would have been very different. Very, very different. It would have brought a whole different audience to the show, different aspect. It would have felt, it would have been real fresh versus same old, same old.
Right. Like I said, I thought you were a totally different person. So when I read it, I was like, oh, but it was just so, I mean, even with other characters on the show, I know, like with Roslyn and stuff like that, there's so many boxes we have to check, you know, and hair seems to always get the brunt end where we have to, I don't want to say whitewash, but we have to like wash everything and make it just so relatable in any circumstance, you know. Like, I would have loved to have you in a ponytail, like, to be honest, you know, ponytail, pull it back, call it a day. But
yeah, especially cop, when I did the, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No,
when I did the research for the detective, and I met so many detectives, and I realized that detectives can have long hair, and that detectives blend in, and that they're undercover, like,
yeah,
and that they once, and they come from that. So there was really no reason for the detective to all of a sudden, you know, change that overall. He could have still been a rookie, because the rookie part of this detective wasn't that he was a rookie detective, it was that this was one of his massive cases. and he had already come to Lincoln. You know, that's the original idea. He'd already come to Lincoln to please look at other cases before, but Lincoln didn't want to look at those cases because they weren't high profile enough.
Right.
So he was, you know, he was a blue collar detective who had come from an urban setting and who believed in solving crimes that other people overlooked. So all of those things fit to the look that I had before, but then, you know, what it came of it, you know, I think was a little confusing for everyone in general. Mm-hmm. I think even the network was even confused, like, what are we going to do with it?
Because I know we had like issues from what products to what, how long, how short, how.
Yeah, I mean,
there was.
Remember you cut it and it was like, look, I have the original picture.
Mm, we said like, ah. Look
the
at that.
Everywhere. Like, it was like, wait a minute. Wait, what is happening here? And then it just kept, you know, going. And then it went to this.
Yeah.
Right, and they're all just different. The different people, you know, they show different kinds.
And well, I mean, your body also on this show. I mean, I know that we don't get to see it at all, but you get jacked in this show over these you know 10 episodes. Eric gets fucking jacked like no one's fucking business.
Man, so, I went through a bad situation in Fear the Walking Dead where. They hit me with a shirt off the day before, and I was not prepared for that. And I was just kind of like, this is not going to happen to me on this channel. This is not going to happen to me. If I have to take my shirt off, I'm going to be ready for this. Okay? They're going to have this. I'm going to show off this eight-pack that I have here. And there's a small glimpse in the episode where they're like showing my dating profile or whatever.
Oh, right. Yes.
You know what I mean? Where you kind of see it a little bit. But overall, which is the discipline of the character, also kind of adapting to this role that I was playing of, you know, he always wants to be ready and he doesn't ever want to fail his team and he doesn't ever want to be the one who's not fast enough or strong enough. So I think it was just part of him using his own attributes to contribute to the team. You know, like you already had the brain, you already had someone that had the wit and even someone who had the gift, like you had all the other things. What you didn't have, it was kind of, you know, quote unquote, the muscle, you know.
True. Very true. Very true. Because Russell couldn't really, he's in a bed.
Right, even though Russell's jacked.
I mean,
Russell got jacked too.
His arms got big from that pilot to that last jacked, one.
Yes. Jacked wheelchair person I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, the pecs came out in the arms. I mean, like, holy cow. Everyone.
And he would test me all the time. He would kept asking me. He'd be like, you hit the gym? You hit the gym before you got here? Like, right. He was like, my man. Moment.
Oh my gosh. So okay, out of everything you've done, what show like sticks out the most? Like when you like think about like which one either early on or now, or which one sticks out the most and why?
Surprisingly, I think Vita sticks out a lot in my life because you know, Vita had a lot to do with first LGBTQIA community being explored in a very different way, in a way where Tanya Saracho was able to represent that community as everyday folks who have the same issues of you got to pay bills, you got to wake up, you got to work, you got debt, you know what I mean? You got people who are trying to screw you over consistently. And as a Christian entering that set, I was the only Christian that was on that set, right? And so, like, you come into a job where most people will look at you like, you know, oh, he probably hates us, you know? And it was nothing but one of the best families I was ever able to experience. And, and to this day, like, we're all super close and super tight. And I think I was able to learn a lot about things that I personally didn't know, which is very important so that when we speak about things and we speak with other people, because I know that the religious community is very ignorant towards these things. Like, I feel like a great mediator to be able to explain things. And it's like, no, it's not how you picture it in your head. It's actually very, very different. Right. So I felt very impacted by that show, by the responsibility, and also by everything that I learned besides just on the role itself. And yeah, I would say that did impact me a lot overall.
What is one aha moment
that you were like, dang, you know what I mean? Like one of those like slaps in the face, like, dang, aha, now I got it. Do you know what I mean? Like it could have been good or bad. Like, or maybe what's a good and what's a bad one? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I mean, I think actually, no, good. I did this episode on good behavior and I worked with Michelle Dockery, who I think is a phenomenal actor. And I was doing, there was a scene that I felt this intimacy in the scene, but I was scared to get close to her because she was Michelle Dockery and they, it was like, are they going to be okay with me getting this close to her? And I think after we shot the scene, like, actually we did one take of it, but we didn't do enough of it, but she also felt the intimacy in the scene and I regret it to this day, not going full force into the scene so that there was a very genuine moment that happened with such an incredible actor. That was a very aha moment in a way of like, you don't need to doubt what you're doing. Just do it. You know, and it is true. It's better for them to tell you to not do that than for you to ask for permission.
Right.
For sure, as an artist. I think that sticks out like that in like half a second. Yeah, absolutely.
I have several, I understand. So now that you had to chop off all your hair, and obviously it is a hard no, how is it going to change you, like going in for characters, like going in for things? How have you started thinking about how to...
Well, I mean, I would say to maybe reiterate it a little bit more, it's kind of like, it's not that I won't cut my hair. For the right role, like, if it calls for it, you know, I can, it's not something that I won't consider, but I think it's important for me to feel like the people that are asking me to change a look or they're creating a character, I need to feel the secureness in what they're actually doing.
Okay.
You know, like, because if you show me a picture of me, you know, from 10 years ago and you're like, we want to turn you into this again, it's kind of like, that's not who I am anymore. You know, like I'm different. I'm a different person.
Because they wanted you like bald. Like yeah, wanted, in yeah, that
they
meeting.
Because they had seen this picture of me bald online. And I'm like, I took that when I was 22.
Yeah.
No, that is an old.
That was the he was like, no, this is what we're doing. I said, oh, right. Okay.
Right.
And I was like, right. I'm not telling
you. I like to embrace where I'm at. And it's like, right. I think there's actors that are really good at playing characters and at doing like period pieces and things like that. And there's actors that I think are able to be in a great creative space and are able to breathe life into a character. I think I'm kind of the second type of actor. And it's like when I'm in a great creative space, I can really breathe life into a character. But if all of a sudden you try to turn me into a character that I'm not, it becomes much more challenging for me. I think moving forward, I just want to stay in an honest space and not tell people what they want to hear so that I get the job. Because that's also my fault. You know, like it's okay for you to be like, you know what? I might not be right for this. And people are going to respect you because if I'm doing a movie, you know, like, I don't want to hire the wrong actor and I don't want the actor to tell me what I want to hear. And then all of a sudden I get the set and it's completely different.
Right. You know?
Like most of directing is done in casting. And if you do casting right, then you don't have to direct too much.
Right.
But if you don't do casting right, you're directing a whole lot of character that like doesn't seem to get. So I think I just want to trust myself more and be more honest. You know, I think that's just more important, whether it gets me the role or not.
If someone like yourself is coming up, I don't know who's listening and all that. I know people always have, we all have our baggage. What is something that you would have wanted to tell your younger self before you started in this journey?
I think one of the things I have definitely learned is that you don't need to go anywhere to be an artist. Like I got really lost in Hollywood because I think you feel like when you get to Hollywood, you can network your way through things and you can meet the right people, et cetera. And like, somebody's going to discover you type of thing. And it's like, that's not art, you know, that's not what being an artist really is. Like develop your craft, continue to learn, to read, to research, to practice, right? To not become like regurgitated vomit from other artists, but like to really yourself, like live life, like experience life so you have something to offer. If you're wherever you're at, you can create work, which is very different, I guess, than when I was starting. Like now, anything you can create can be seen by the world as long as it's good.
Yeah.
And it's okay if you start creating and it's not as great as you want it to be. But once you get those projects out of the way, the next ones that you're doing get better and better. So just keep going. Don't feel like you got to go and meet someone or be somewhere to be who you want to be. You can definitely craft it right where you're at. Be fearless and trust that the process is going to get you to where you need to go.
Good advice. I like that a lot. Now that we have a whole new world of acting where literally anything can be seen anywhere with the day of media, what do you suggest people do? Do they become TikTok famous? Do they still try to go the same route? How would you tell someone to like find their true self and express it through like social media? Because a lot of people are seeing that. I know you were so good at social media for Lincoln. I mean, you were just on top of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, how would you work on yourself and also show the true
Thanks
you?
Thanks to you, by the way. You're the one that gave me the advice on how to stay on top of it. That was all you, Daniel. You were like my social media guy. Seriously, you're like, you need to do this, and you need to do this, and you need to download this, and have this ready for this. I'm like, okay.
I saw you posted one of your photo shoot photos, and I'm like, yes, he finally posted another one. Thank goodness. I know your shirt was off. I'm like, oh my gosh, he did it.
Yeah, you know, and actually, that's part of the answer. That's part of the answer. Like, you know, I worked this great body, quote unquote, right, and then.
Legit. I mean, guys, like, I have to say, legit, he did show off. He was proud as a man can be. I mean, he also did the work.
Like, I was with my family, and the family could see that, like, I was working for the family. Like, I'm working to be better for the team. But then it was like, you know, I think that what you want to fight in this new world is not feel like you need to expose yourself to be someone. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's very troubling for me overall to put up shirtless photos, because it's kind of like, I don't want to put up booty shots. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to, it's like me putting my package on display type of thing. It's kind of like, that's not who I am. And that's not who people are either. I know that draws attention because, you know, sexual marketing is so impactful. So I think that in this new world, I think everybody has to control not wanting to be seen, like that ego, right? Like not wanting attention more than actual growth. Mm-hmm. Because the moment you get attention, you can't take it off of you. No. And you better be ready for that attention, because your best moment could become your grave. Mm-hmm. If you're not ready for it. So definitely just trust the slow burn. The slow burn is always great. It always brings great results into life. Take your time. It's a long career. If you really want to be an actor, it can't be that you want to blow up because you're young. It can't be that, like, oh, I'm in shape, I have this six pack, everybody has to see me now. I'm not a model. Like, I'm an artist. I'm a performer, right? I want to perform when I'm 70 years old. Mm. And I want people to look back when I'm 70 to look and respect my career, not be like, oh, he was like fashion. He put on everything when it was popular so that he could be seen.
Hmm. That's actually
I want to be classic. And I think everyone should focus on being classic.
Well, this hairstyle that no one can see, because this is just a podcast, is very classic.
You're not throwing up these videos?
Well, now that I have permission, you know, I like to respect, yeah. You know. Because some people are not looking their best. I'm like, no, but I need it because I don't know how else to record, to be honest. And I like to see people when I'm talking to them, you know, see where it goes.
Yeah, I'm the same way. You know, I thought it was you. I got the hair done yesterday, and I thought to myself, oh, let's jump with Daniel because it's all about hair. This is perfect.
Does it hurt? Is it still tight, nice and tight?
I appreciate the opportunity of being here and chatting with you, Daniel. I really appreciated your honesty working with you. And I think that you, there was moments where I had certain issues that you were able to clarify in a professional way, not a personal way. like, you know, like you said, we're, you know, even though we treat each other like family, this isn't family time. This is business time. And it has to be remembered when you're on set.
Aw, wow. I said that? Wow. Interesting. I really come up with some shit, I have to say.
You're very wise, man.
I come up with some shit. I mean, just to make people happy. Wow, look at me go. Hey, we didn't have a whoop on set that day.
No. I wasn't trying. You weren't making me happy at all. You were putting me in my place. You were putting me in my place professionally that day, and I appreciated that very much. I walked out of there, you know, respecting you a lot more that day. I remember that.
Oh, I mean, I am the one with no. If I can tell someone that they're sucking in a little because the camera's not the best angle, I feel I can be real with people. And I kind of honor my, like I would pull people aside in the right time and manner and like, let them know. Cause it's only gonna help at the end of the day. Cause we're in the world of fake. And I hate that about the world I work in, but the relationships I have with people who I do their hair, you know, I love them. I'm supporting them 100%. So I'm happy that came through. That was a cute one out of this little interview I wasn't expecting, first and foremost. That's very sweet.
Well, it is tough to navigate in the world of fake. You know what I mean? Like I have to also control that I can't be judgmental of people for trying to survive. And I've been guilty of that. I've been guilty of that on set for seeing how people operate and the alliances that they make and the alliances that they won't make. But at the same time, I got to think to myself, like, people are trying to, they're trying to do what they can do to keep food on their table and food on their family's table. So I can't, who am I to judge that in reality?
Right. So tell the listeners, how have you been holding up with quarantine? Are you quarantined? I know you're in the Dominican Republic right now.
I am in an undisclosed location at the moment, working on a project.
Okay, great. Working.
Yeah, and good. So I've been working like crazy. I don't know, man. Like, quarantine has been super difficult, and I try not to speak about it too much because a lot of people are hurting, and a lot of people are struggling, and I've been able to bounce and do other things. And I think it's a good time for everyone to really think about, what am I doing and why am I doing it? And is it really going to make me happy?
100%. Yeah, I know. Well, I was ready. I was ready to go back to work. Remember, I had 2 months off from, so I didn't do anything between LinkedIn and this. So I was like, no, I'm ready. No, they said, no. I literally had a show like the 15th. Like, they said no. So it's a whole new world here, like whole new world. But I'm happy you're working and keeping busy. Yeah. I mean, you look great, your hair.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't wait to see what you're going to be creating. With what we're going to see next, I'm quite stoked. Do you want to give a shout out and like tell anyone like where they can find you, give them your Instagram handle? Jiminy crickets. And we're still trying to push you got the check mark. You might as well use it. What social medias are you on? Anything should watch out for? Oh my gosh. Still your PR man over here.
I think pictures are better than the things I say, you know. Instagram is at RamsesJT. And the next film that I have coming out is called Critical Thinking. It's coming out in the United States September 4th, directed by John Leguizamo, starring the great Angel Curiel that you can catch on Pose, and also Jorge Lindenborg, which is a rising, incredible star. That project I'm really, really, really looking forward to. My God, the young talent in that movie is going to be the future of film in the Latinx community by far.
Yes, I can't wait. Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. And we will take a look out and hopefully we'll have you back in a little while after things come out and we can, you know, maybe not social distance. But thank you so much for being part of the Wig Hackers family.
Thank you, Daniel. And I hope you and your family, your sister, your mom, your dad.
I know.
I hope you guys are all super healthy and super together and, you know. Everything is going well for you, Daniel. Nothing but blessings for you.
All right. Bye, guys.
Hey guys, I'm not sure that you know about the Spornet hairbrushes. So, funny thing is that I actually have had them in my kit for years now, like years. When we're talking years, like almost my whole career, from back in the day on the Broadway show Hair. I loved the lightness of them and truthfully the color. That's really what drew me to them. So I had no idea that I actually have been using them for that long. So I used the Prego collection, literally in the 1.5 inch, the 2 inch, the 3 inch, and the 4 inch. I have them all. I have 2 sets, one for the stage and one for the trailer. And now that we're going into a whole new world of, you know, after COVID, everyone's going to have their own set of brushes. So I would definitely check them out. They are super affordable and they work amazing. Like I literally, my Prego brushes, they literally get used almost every day. You've seen it on absolutely everyone that I've worked on. So like from Vanessa Williams to everyone, I mean, legit everyone. So I would definitely check them out. Spornet.com, Spornette.com. Literally, these are the brushes that are going to change your life. They have all different varieties. They have extension brushes. They have brushes for men's. They have cushions, teasing bros, tanglers. I would definitely check them out, especially if you want a product that has been around for a long time, and they have been. And so they are making a huge comeback. Oh yeah, check them out today. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Wig Hackers. Have an idea or a question you'd like me to answer? Feel free to reach out on any of my social media platforms at Daniel Coy Official on Instagram or on Facebook. I'd love to hear from you and hope to inspire you. Don't forget to share and rate me and do your hair, because if you're looking good, you're feeling better.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.